CHI Files, the ultimate Bears podcast with Nate Lundy.
It is time to talk Bears. Let's do it with our buddy Mike Harmon from Fox Sports Radio. He is on Twitter at Swollen Dome. And Mike, let's start here. The Bears have not looked all that great during the preseason. What's your assessment of how they looked during the preseason? Just kind of an overall maybe letter grade of what you saw.
It's an incomplete because I don't know that you saw anything. I mean, obviously we know across the NFL, you're doing a lot of vanilla schemes, doing a lot of basic looks because you're not going to sell too much early on. But the fact of the matter is you're looking at a team that couldn't cobble together the five offensive linemen they wanted for the season. They had to go out, and by luck of the draw, Josh Sitton ends up being out there, and they're able to bring him in, which should fortify things, which is, I guess, why they were sitting on a mountain of cash instead of spending it. That's a whole other discussion for another time. But when you're already talking about Kyle Long going to need surgery before you've even gone into a season, you're in a pretty bad spot. The running backs, you've got a committee in place. Langford expected to be the leader, but he's already been banged up. Kadeem Terry, potentially the short yardage guy along with Jordan Howard, also banged up. So you don't really know what you have at many of your key positions. Defensively, I can tell you this. Unless something remarkable happens, they're going to be sieve-like and feasted upon in the secondary. Pass rush doesn't look like it's going to be anything formidable, at least from the outset, and the cornerbacks look like they're going to be on an island. The days of Peanut Tillman being able to lock down part of the field, I know obviously he wasn't there the last couple of years, but those days seem a very distant memory from where the Bears are personnel-wise right now.
An interesting personnel move, Mike, too, with the cut of Robbie Gould, the kicker, the all-time franchise leader in points and in field goals made and all of that. What's your take on that move, given the fact that you're talking about somebody that understands how that Soldier Field wind navigates and all of that? Was this a good move by the Bears?
I think as you look at it, you know, some reduced it to a salary cap move. And as I said, they weren't in any danger of needing any of that money to bring on Sitton and whomever else become six free here as we get the regular season started. I think part of it was the effectiveness had waned a bit. The distance was certainly still there, but the percentages were down. Some of it is sending a message, anybody's expendable. And I think in a nod to some of our fantasy football discussions of you and I and years back is, you know, they think they can just find another kicker that'll come in and replace it. I'm with you. I think in November or December, it'll be very telling about which kickers they decide as they'll rotate. Because I don't think as we start things on Sunday, Connor Barth is going to be the guy there for the long haul.
What do you think, Mike, needs to happen with the Bears for the offense to click? Obviously, Adam Gase is gone now. There's talent with Alshon Jeffrey. There's talent with Jay Cutler. There's talent with Jeremy Langford. Kevin White, who missed all of last year after the injury in the preseason. But what's missing for this offense to click? Or do you think that it is actually in position to click?
I think it'll be better than it was a year ago, even though, you know, there were a lot of Cutler playing within himself and all the Adam Gase things. You know, they were still 23rd, averaging just shy of 21 points per game. So they weren't finishing the job moving down. Obviously, the arrival of White, assuming he can stay healthy, is immense. But you talk about on the other side, Alshon Jeffrey. In a contract year, we assume that he'll play through some of the ailments that sat him down for the training camp, that sat him down for chunks of last season once things got a little bit dicey in terms of the wins and losses. So that, you're looking at two big bookends, and then Zach Miller, who's still a steady tight end, not a world beater, but a guy that they counted on to come up in big spots last year in Gase's system. And I think with Loggins, it'll be much the same. Some familiarity with Cutler, obviously key for Loggins. We always hear the national narrative of cutting down on Jay Cutler. Like, you would have signed that contract too, so we got to let it go. The Bear, you can yell at the Bears. You can't yell at the player for the amount of money someone decided to give him. But a little bit of familiarity with the coordinator coming from the quarterback's position. So looks like at least from there, the terminology and everything should be able to move forward. Again, I'm just really afraid of that offensive line, the fact that they're already trying to do Band-Aids before we've even had one snap of the regular season against a Houston team that will actually present J.J. Watt 2 to 3 weeks ago was, hey, things are looking good. You won't have to face 99. Go figure. He found the superhuman serum, and he's back on the field.
Last one for you, Mike. As you look at the coaching tenure of John Fox, I have a feeling you might give it an incomplete because it is only a year in. But you know, your grade and your thoughts right now on Foxy as the head coach of the Bears?
Attitude is where you need it to be. Accountability, where you need it to be. The biggest thing is I think you had to do a big purge in terms of philosophy, attitude, and just flat-out personnel from the failed horrific Mark Trestman experiment, not to mention Phil Emery towards the back end of his run with the Bears. Really didn't do much in the front office to secure quality free agents, or really didn't draft very well. So where other teams, particularly in division, when you look at the model of consistency that Green Bay is, that you've got to have guys on your roster that you drafted, guys you brought in, trying to pick and win via free agency doesn't work. Look at all your stalwart franchises. It's about good moves at the GM. Look, you know, you're there in Denver. You see it time and time again. Yes, you can bring in a couple of guys to sprinkle in, but the base of it is you can't miss on every draft pick. And for Chicago, as John Fox gets going, you at least know that he, Ryan Pace, have found at least what they think is a formula to push forward. And the Bears fans love the attitude. I can tell you that. After Lovie Smith, wasn't very fiery, wasn't a guy that would show much emotion at all. Win or loss, you know, you didn't know what you were getting. The same thing that Cutler gets criticized for. And then Trestman just didn't know what he was doing, didn't know how to talk to a room. So Fox getting, I think he'll have a very long leash in terms of how the fans look at things. Now it's just a question of whether he can compete in the division.
Well, last one, you just mentioned it. I'll actually extend it out. One more question, Mike. You just talked about the division. You know, the Vikings are playing around now with Sam Bradford, but they've still got a good defense and a good running game. The Packers are the Packers. 6 wins last year for the Bears. What do you think is a realistic number this year?
6. Because I don't think Detroit's as bad as some make them out to be. I'm interested to see exactly whether Matthew Stafford is better when he doesn't have to fixate on number 81 and can actually spread the ball around. So I think there's some change afoot there that'll make things interesting and tighten up the division. With Minnesota, as you said, everything built. As long as Sam Bradford doesn't throw up on himself, you're looking at a squad that's going to be competitive. And Green Bay, just keep watching the knees of Jordy Nelson. I think that's as far as that team's going to be able to go. Defensively, solid. Still have a good scheme of getting after the quarterback. Aaron Rodgers, wasn't on him that Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb couldn't do their jobs last year. Jordy Nelson, unless something changed dramatically, Jordy Nelson's the cog here. And if he's slow out of the gate, Packers will be as well.
You hear him nightly on Fox Sports Radio. You also get a chance to follow him on Twitter, at Swollen Dome. Our good buddy Mike Harmon with us. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for talking some Bears with us here on the podcast.
See, now I'm all despondent before season even begins. How do you like that? Way to go, Nate.
Hey, always able to help out a friend. Mike Harmon with us. Stick around. Coming up next, it's the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
Well, I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise And I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team, and Donovan McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity – to turn Sam Bradford. I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott. It could be a huge plus for them, but that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to be. Yeah, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, you know, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at that Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. You know, the preseason was just not going to be important. So, I mean, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. So, I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you've got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like a Mike Blark. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk, okay. But he's not bad. This David Johnson is pretty good. They want to run the ball well. And if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. They're going to play great defense. You know, typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship-caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bill team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do. More so than any team in the league, they morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. clearly that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo. You know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how the, these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you, and we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've play the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience, one team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of Overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. Had sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. you know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana, just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five. Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different, just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes the national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me, whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.